Welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark A. Bell. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark.
Hi, Mike.
You got a good poem this week. It begins to look at some of the side effects and some of the new type 2 diabetes medicines. I don't know if listeners, perhaps older listeners, are like me, but type 2 diabetes medicines have become quite complicated. There are lots of new guys on the block. Some of these new medicines increase insulin availability, either directly through administration or through agents that promote insulin secretion. Others improve sensitivity to insulin. Some delay the delivery and absorption of carbs from the GI tract. Others increase urinary glucose excretion. Anyways, lots to sort through. Still, the initial treatment in most type 2 diabetic patients should begin with diet and weight loss, exercise, and metformin. But sometimes that isn't possible. We know that lots of our patients have difficulty tolerating metformin. So where do we go from there? We know that there are also perhaps some cardiovascular benefits that accrue to some of these new drug classes and not to others. There have been longstanding concerns about the cardiovascular safety of first-generation sulfonylureas and cardiovascular effects of the later generation sulfonylureas like glimepiride. Still, the evidence is emerging, but one of the things we clearly have to pay attention to is not only the insulin, the hemoglobin A1C, but what are we really getting from in terms of POMs? Are we going to reduce cardiovascular disease or other end organ disease? The POM that you identified was published in JAMA 2019. It starts on page 1155 for those that want to find the original article. It attempts to answer the question, is one of these drugs and one of these new classes of drugs are called DPP4 drugs. They inhibit dipeptopeptidase 4. The DPP4 causes insulin levels to rise. So the question is one of these new DPP4 inhibitors, is it non-inferior to glimepiride in adults with poorly controlled type 2 diabetes? So a subpopulation, but a very important question. Mark, what did they find?
Yeah, this was a comparison of linagliptin, which is Tradjenta, with glimepiride, which is a third generation sulfonylurea. Like you said, the University Diabetes trial from many years ago found some increased cardiovascular risk with the use of the first generation sulfonylureas, but that hasn't been seen, at least in observational data, for the second and third generation. But people still kind of have that in the back of their mind. And so I thought this was a great, important study, and I've been looking for a study like this to come, and hopefully there are more to come with the SGLT2 inhibitors. The ideal study would be randomizing patients to SGLT2 inhibitor, a gliptin, and a third-generation sulfonylurea. So we'll see if that's down the road. But anyway, they found folks with type 2 diabetes. They all had an A1C between 6.5% and 8.5%, which they call poorly controlled. I call that average control, at least in my patient panel. I'm happy when I get folks between 7% and 7.5%. And they all had high cardiovascular risk. Most had actually established heart disease or multiple risk factors. They wanted to target a population where there were going to be a lot of events. Patients were randomized to linagliptin 5 milligrams a day or glimepiride at a dose of 1 to 4 milligrams a day, and it was titrated to get the A1C less than 7.5%. The average A1C achieved was, I think, 7.2%. They added additional medications as needed if there was persistent hyperglycemia, again, to get them below 7.5%. Individuals and outcome assessors were both masked to the treatment, and they assessed all the outcomes. Complete follow-up occurred for 96% of patients at a mean of 6.3 years, so that's very good follow-up. In the intention-to-treat analysis, they found no difference between the groups treated with linagliptin versus glimepiride in the primary endpoint, which was MACE, you know, major adverse cardiovascular events, cardiovascular death, MI, or stroke. It was 11.8% in the linagliptin group, 12.0% in the glimepiride group, no difference. There was also no significant difference between groups in all-cause mortality or importantly, study dropout rates due to adverse events. Weight gain was significantly higher in the glimepiride group by about 3.5 pounds over the 6 years. The rates of hypoglycemia, including severe events, were also increased in the glimepiride group, but the absolute risk increase for severe events was only about one additional event per year per 100 patients. This study, in the bottom line, found that linagliptin is similar to glimepiride for reducing cardiovascular endpoints at high risk for cardiovascular disease. There was more hypoglycemia, it was mostly mild, and the weight gain was more common with glimepiride. Now, having said that, you could spin the study and say, aha, linagliptin is much better because it has less hypoglycemia, less weight gain. But it costs almost $400 per month. This is looking at the U.S. price for GoodRx versus about $3 for glimepiride. So a very big difference in cost. We have to ask ourselves, is it worth, $3,000 or $4,000 extra dollars to prevent one hypoglycemic, or $3,000 or $4,000 per patient to reduce the risk of a severe hypoglycemic event by about 1%? And yeah. I would say that's an open question.
I'm not sure it's so open. That's crazy.
I'm being nice, Mike. It's not, okay. Yeah.
If patients are given the choice, I think they would vote very, very loudly. It's also important to note that lots of these studies have been carried out with these, as you described, sort of high risk populations to increase the hazard rate of major cardiovascular events. And they complete the studies in relatively short amounts of time by choosing these high risk folks. It is a little bit difficult based on those studies then to talk about cardiovascular safety in lower risk populations. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah. So if they had found a difference, you would have to, have that caveat. I mean, they didn't find a difference. So presumably there's also no cardiovascular difference in cardiovascular outcomes in low risk people, since they didn't see it in high risk people. On the other hand, if you had seen a reduction, you'd have to, be cautious and say this would be a much smaller benefit in the low risk folks.
Fair enough. Okay, thanks, Mark. A couple of important lessons here. And again, our patients can be given the choice between a $400 a month drug and a $3 a month drug. Talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.